both of my guests. Ronan Tynan, who was rushing for a plane. There's another guest we're about to introduce now, and he's rushing also. He represents, indeed, and has Cavan Monaghan constituency. We've known him for many a long year, and I'd like to welcome Brendan Smith, TD, who just landed back in Ireland this morning, having spent most of the last week here and he is the chair of the Joint Committee for Foreign Affairs, Trade and Defence. Brendan, I have to take it that you got back in one piece.
I did indeed, thank God. It's been back very, very safely and very comfortable trip back on Aer Lingus from Boston to Dublin and back in my constituency from early morning Irish time, catching up with some constituency work.
You know, I'd like to address a couple of items, but perhaps we might start with what appears and what has appeared to be confusing not only to Americans but to those of us who grew up in Ireland, where the two main political parties were Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and nobody would ever have imagined that the day would come when, in fact, two opposing political parties would be part of a coalition government. Just give us an overview, if you will, on how that came about and how it works.
Well, at the 2016 2011 election, the Fine Gael party had a very substantial mandate from the people with a very strong number of almost 70 TDs. The Labour Party at that time was 37 TDs. We were a small party. We were only back to 20 seats, Fianna Fáil, in 2011. Roll on the general election of 2016, the Fianna Fáil party, we more than doubled our seats to 44. Fine Gael lost, were dramatically reduced, and Labour Party, which was in coalition with Fine Gael, was reduced from 37 seats to 7. Now, there was no combination in the Dáil making up a majority. Fine Gael were only a few seats, 5 seats more than us. They had around 50 TDs. Now, the Fianna Fáil party put forward our party leader, Micheál Martin, for the office of Taoiseach. He did not gain the support of the Dáil from independents or other smaller parties. Enda Kenny at that time was put forward by his party, and he was supported by a number of independents, but he was far from a majority. We're in a very unstable situation. There are still major issues to be confronted in the country in regard to economic issues, in regard to employment, which thankfully is improving. We made the unprecedented decision at that time is that we would offer a confidence and supply support to the Fine Gael party plus the independents who were going into government with them on the basis that a 3-year programme was agreed in relation to the overall expenditure and income, the overall economic situation in regard to the expenditure by government and the income it would generate. We, at that time then, had a number of specific issues that we said we would support the Fine Gael plus independents forming the minority government, provided a number of major issues were tackled, including housing, mental health, some education issues as well, and that if the economy grew and there was additional scope for expenditure by government on an annual basis, we insisted that that additional expenditure, it would go on a basis of 2-to-1 to improve public services, and the other 1/3 of the additional expenditure for government would go to reducing the tax burden on particularly the lower paid. We said if issues in regard to confidence votes came up in the Dáil or that, that we would abstain on those issues. Mm-hmm. When we abstain as a party that has now 45 TDs, because an independent joined us since the general election of 2016, when we abstain, Fine Gael and plus their independent TDs who are in government with them have a majority. But at that time, other parties talked about what needed to be done in the country, such as Sinn Féin and others, but they weren't willing to participate, go into government or support a minority government and take hard decisions. We were willing to go into government, but we didn't have the numbers or we didn't get the support from other parties. So that's how that particular confidence and supply. We are the main opposition party. We're not in coalition. We're not in partnership. We have a confidence and supply agreement based on specific issues. Now, the three budgets that were we committed to support the government on have been honoured. They have been passed. They're gone through our Dáil and Seanad. And what was committed in 2016 as well was that at the end of the three-year period, there would be a review of the confidence and supply to see whether it should be renewed for another year or 2 years or what would happen. At the moment, negotiators on behalf of the Fianna Fáil party, four TDs plus four members of the Fine Gael party, some of the ministers, are reviewing that particular confidence and supply agreement, and we will see then, probably early in the new year, whether that will be renewed or not.
Just again for the purpose of clarification, you appear to be reluctant to acknowledge, and maybe it's not, but it is perceived at least anyway, that you know that this is a coalition government, that you know that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are on the same page, and as you've aptly covered, you can abstain at any point. And just for our listeners worldwide, TD is indeed the Chochtra Dáil, which is indeed representative of Parliament. And we are speaking with Brendan Smith. Again, you've served for decades as, you know, former Minister for Agriculture and Fisheries, Food, Justice, Law Reform, Department of Agriculture, Minister for Children, and, you know, you started off, actually, as a special advisor to the former Taoiseach, Deputy Prime Minister of Ireland, the late John Wilson. Let's bring this up to... So just the bottom line on this one. Fine Gael party might consider, or in fact they may say outright, that yes, that you are part of a coalition government. You're kind of dispelling that notion?
Oh, absolutely. And actually, we probably vote against Fine Gael on more routine day-to-day issues than some of the other parties. For example, the Sinn Féin party are often supporting legislative measures being introduced by Fine Gael that we oppose, and other independents too do that as well on different issue by issue. And we have no problem with that. Parties are entitled naturally to make decisions based on their assessment of the situation. But I want to make it clear, the Fianna Fáil party took a very responsible decision in that we saw the country needed a government. We didn't need instability, because if you take them back to the worldwide economic recession, go back 2 years, the situation was still precarious in regard to economic recovery, and we needed to make further economic progress. Instability would send out, political instability would send out a message to the markets and to the world economy that would not be helpful in the need that we have to continue to work to improve our economy. And I would say it wasn't an easy decision for us politically. Absolutely not. And many members of our own party would have had reservations about the decision. Our membership in every constituency in the country, widespread percentage of the of our membership would be opposed to it. But they realise that the country, we were putting the country first, not our own political interests. Like other parties gave promises in elections and told us what needed to be done, but they weren't willing to go into government and try to and make the hard decisions that's attached to government in any country in the world. But they were willing to talk from the sidelines, but not step up to the plate. We made that decision, and Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil have been the two major parties in our state since the foundation of the state. We've been direct opponents over many decades, and we still are, but the situation was unprecedented in view of the fact of the architecture of the Dáil and the way the people voted. They gave Fine Gael about 50 seats, they gave us 44, they gave Insane 20-something, and a huge number then of smaller parties and independents who were the remainder. So there was no easy combination to put together to give the country a government.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. Now, not unlike in our own country here, where you know, the Republican Party, and particularly with our controversial U.S. president here, a lot of people are, you know, a great number of people, particularly Democrats, are trying their level best to point out all the faults, you know, of the current government here at a time when the economy seems to be, you know, in the rip-roaring state, you know, the economy. Do you have pretty much as, you know, as in your party, Fianna Fáil, do you have difficulty in getting across that you're the better party, despite the fact that the Irish economy is absolutely, you know, is doing, you know, amazingly well, and nobody thought the day would come when we'd hear after the collapse of the Celtic Tiger that government would have surplus money as it comes up to budget time. What can you relate to that?
I can indeed. Now, our economy has grown, thankfully, and we want to see it grow more. And actually, our party in government up to 2011, and I was part of the government, we had to make very, very tough decisions that impacted on people's day-to-day life, on their take-home income, huge pressures on families, as was experienced in most countries in the Western world as well. We made decisions at that time that we knew were hugely damaging for us from a political point of view, but there were decisions that needed to be made. We made them. Thankfully, the economy is recovering, but it's recovering. The recovery is very much focused on the east coast of the country, our capital city, and within that commuter belt, and in the major urban centres as well. The parts of the country that I represent, and the border region, and our neighbours in the northwest as well, they still do not see the recovery that is being witnessed in the east of the country. And what we would argue as well, there are huge housing problems in our country at the present time, and the government haven't got their housing policy correct. There are major issues in regard to health, and we believe that there's a huge need and urgency needed for the government to implement measures that would address the housing issue, that would improve services in relation to health, and very importantly, the need as well to have a better regional economic spread of development and economic progress as well. That's not happening at the present time, and I'm not trying to talk down in any way the progress that has been made. There are more people in work, thank God, and we all want to see that happen. But you take people in my part of the world, a lot of them will be commuting towards the capital city or near or Dublin for their jobs. Those people are glad to have jobs, but what we want to have jobs is for people in their own immediate areas, if at all possible.
Yeah. You know the expression, your own would gut you. Well, we have a rash of both phone calls and emails here, most of them actually from your own constituency of Cavan and Monaghan. And basically, they want to know, you know, while we're discussing, you know, the topics to date, how will Brexit affect your constituency? You're smack there on the, you know, on the border. And is there a concern that seems to, you know, be escalating negatively, of people saying, you know, all of this stuff is fine, but if Brexit isn't sorted out to the betterment of, you know, not only Northern Ireland but the border counties, you know, what the hell, you know, we're off the mark here. Give us your own view.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I have to say that since the British had a referendum and they decided to leave the European Union in June 2016, our political system nationally, both in the Dáil and in the Seanad and in every committee in our parliament, has been consumed by the Brexit issue, and at local political level as well. Actually, a year before the Brexit referendum, I held a public meeting in my own constituency with speakers from Northern Ireland and different interest groups from our own state as well to discuss the implications of a potential exit from the European Union by Britain. I was that concerned even a year before the referendum. But we were all hoping and confident at that time that when the British came to vote that they would remain in the European Union. And then go back to Good Friday of 1998, when we had the signing of the historic Good Friday Agreement. That agreement has been transformative for our region. It has been transformative for Ireland, North and South, and for Irish-British relations. I grew up on the border in a village in Bonby in West Cavan. We all grew up with the troubled times when there were permanent vehicle checkpoints on the main routes into our neighbouring county of Fermanagh. That was experienced all along the border. With the single market being established by the European Union in 1993, at that time the customs posts were removed. With the great achievement of the Good Friday Agreement, for which my former party leader and Taoiseach Bertie Ahern did so much, and you think of the work of Senator George Mitchell, President Clinton, Tony Blair, and other political leaders, both North and South. When that was achieved, all the security apparatus and the restrictions on the movement of people, goods and services were removed. Our society then, locally, all along the border, from the top of Donegal, from Inishowen, back to County Louth, it was transformative for our region. The region was normalised from a political point of view in regard to us going about our business and travelling into Northern Ireland. I have to say, Adrian, when I travel through parts of my own constituency of Cavan Mallon, I go in and out of Fermanagh constantly. When I travel from Cavan Town to Clonus, and I'm sure there's plenty of your listeners from both counties would know that road, I go into Fermanagh three times on that short route between Cavan and Clonus, because we go through Fermanagh on three occasions. What we have now, since the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, was a huge growth in the All-Ireland economy. Businesses that were solely based in the south or that were solely based in the north, now quite a number of them have a presence and have enterprises both north and south. Take the agri-food industry, which is critical to my constituency of Cavan Monaghan and so many other areas. You take the major processing companies like Lakeland Dairies. They have three processing plants in the south, in our state, two in Northern Ireland. Raw material, in that instance milk, travels north, travels south, depending on the time of year. The same with pig meat, sheep meat, and poultry meat. And if we are in a different regulatory regime than the British, then there will be checks and there will be restrictions on product going into a different trade zone. And to complicate our local economy even more. The sectors that drive the economy in areas like Cavanmannan, and that's typical of the Northwest and the Northeast, are the agri-food sector, the construction product sector, and the engineering sector. Those sectors are more heavily dependent on exports to Northern Ireland and Britain than any other sector. And they are the three sectors that our local economy are most heavily dependent upon. So you can see the huge negative knock-on effect. If Britain leave without a deal, if there's a bad trade deal between Britain and Europe, then it would have adverse consequences for us, big time. And instead of us growing the All-Ireland economy by building on the progress that has been made since 1998, unfortunately, we would be going backwards. And I was listening to some radio discussions since I came back home earlier today, and it looks as if Prime Minister May would have difficulty getting the draft withdrawal agreement that she has signed up to with the European Union. She'd get it hard to get through our Parliament, so you don't know then what happens then. Do they go for another vote in Parliament? Will the idea of a second referendum take hold, or will the idea of a general election take hold? All of that uncertainty is bad for our economy, and what I'm thinking about, the bigger picture, the important picture is a weaker economy impacts on jobs. I want to see more jobs in our area. We want to see more jobs all over the country. But Brexit, no matter what shape it finalises in, it's negative for the island of Ireland.
You don't have to convince us of that. I want to touch on, because I know you're heading for a meeting now, but your trip here, indeed, you know, to again meet with and you know, get the lowdown on, you know, what Foreign Affairs in Ireland is doing as a department, you know, and your aim actually was to meet with the diaspora and engage with the Irish community, not only in New York but in Boston. On your team there, you had again, you as chairman of the Joint Committee on Foreign Affairs, and deputies Nike Hollins of Fianna Fáil, Sean Crowe, Sinn Féin, and Billy Lawless, of course, our hero, senator here in the United States. So you're in New York. Were there any surprises as you went around to visit the various centres like Irish Repertory Theatre, Irish Arts Centre, Immerdale, Immigration in the Aisling in the Bronx, and the Aisling Irish Centre in Yonkers? Were you, you know, when you're having your powwow after these meetings, did you see that in fact not only is the Irish government and the Department of Foreign Affairs doing an excellent job, but for instance the centres themselves, and as you went up to Boston, again to the Irish Cultural Centre, what's your evaluation? And we should acknowledge that, of course, none of these would be effective without the support of the continuing support of the Irish government. But what feeling did you go back with, about your trip?
Well, it's very, very positive, because we have a duty as the Oireachtas Committee or Parliamentary Committee. We have an oversight of the department and its expenditure. And the Emigrant Support Programme is very important in assisting the different advocacy centres, the different immigration centres, and also our cultural centres. That programme is important in supporting, with some financial assistance, the work of those centres. Could I just say, one other thing that struck me was our Consul General in New York, Kieran, and our Consul General in Boston, Shane, and all their staff, they have a huge knowledge and interaction with all the Irish groups and with civic and community leaders in both cities and states as well. And I want to pay compliments to our two consul generals in New York and Boston, yeah, and all their support staff as well. Could I just say, we saw it firsthand, the very good use that grant aid is going to in the different advocacy centres, in the different immigration centres that we visited, such as in the Ashling Centre, the Emerald Immigration Centre in New York, and also the centres in Boston, the International Immigration Centre, all of those centres. And then you mentioned the Irish Repertory Theatre, Kieran O'Reilly and Charlotte there, yeah, and Pauline and the Irish Arts Centre. That funding assists our advocacy groups, such as Irish Pastoral Centre in Boston as well, sure, to provide services to people from a welfare point of view, from immigration advice as well. We have also the more recent development of some assistance being given to the cultural centres to upgrade facilities or to provide new facilities. And our cultural centres are very important in demonstrating and showcasing the best of Irish theatre, the best of our music, song and dance. And it was so heartening to hear of Irish classes, of music lessons, all of that going on. And we had that in all the different centres we visited. Huge commitment by volunteers to ensure that good services are provided to people who need advice, who need assistance,
right,
and also people promoting our heritage and our culture, nurturing it so well. And in every centre we went to, that the pride in their work, their commitment to ensuring that people who need assistance were given that help, and also ensuring that Irish music, song, dance, or Gaelic games, and all of those are promoted and made available. And when you hear of the huge crowds, yeah, that were at the recent games in Boston, most heartening. And one of the other many extremely beneficial visits and meetings we had was the public meeting we had in the St. Barnabas School Centre as well,
yeah,
in New York, meeting with different Irish groups, meeting people who spoke to us privately, people who spoke publicly, and obviously the whole area of immigration is one of huge concern to the Irish community.
Yeah, it is, and at Brendan, at this particular time, we are reluctant to, to send false hopes to many of the undocumented who are here, from Ireland. The toxic, bitter reaction in Washington and indeed other areas doesn't lend itself to a solution anytime soon. But one of the things that I would like to point out, and indeed unto your colleagues as well, is that in addition to the funding, the money handed out by the Irish government in Ireland, you had mentioned, Kieran Madden, Consul General here in New York, and Shane in Boston. Without the support of the consulates, without the support of the Irish consulates in both areas, and indeed I'm sure throughout the United States, the money on its own would not have the impact. I think that the Irish community is more than aware that, the focal point, what makes the clock tick, are the Irish consulates, and we're extraordinarily lucky indeed to have the expertise and the cooperation and the dedication that you will find in the Irish centres, and also, of course, on the cultural end. Brendan, I know you have to.
Oh, absolutely.
I know you have to go. We go back a long way, indeed.
To indeed.
we do.
And we have to get you. Yeah, I hope the next interview you would be doing with me would be in my own hometown here in Cavan or in Monaghan either, where we had very good exchange of views and interviews when we held the Fáisiúna Héireann on three successive years.
And
so hopefully you'll have the opportunity to visit us again.
Well, I can tell you, because we've said it many times, we covered many's the Fla Ciúil in Ireland, but not only the success, but the tremendous atmosphere of the Fla in Cavan is something that we were very, very proud to be a part of. We broadcast live on those 3 years there. And let me just ask you, this is half tongue-in-cheek now, but is what you had a good run in Cavan. What's the likelihood of the Fla returning, say, up to Cavan, Monaghan, up to that area again?
Oh, I sincerely hope it will, and I know that the Fla and I haven't been held here for three successive years. It gave a massive boost and an interest in Irish music, song and dance. And I have to say it's so heartening, the events I go to and see so many young people so well accomplished in music, song, dance and in recitation as well. And I would sincerely hope that we would get the Fla Ciúil back. In fairness, other towns have been bidding for it for some years as well. So down the road, not too far away, I would hope it would be back in Cavan, and it would be hosted very well again. And in conclusion, Kieran, could I just say, away from home, and we know there has been a decline in the Irish population in North America, as we had in the flow of emigration since the 1960s. Really, it was limited emigration, and because of the lack of visas and the lack of green cards and that. And I think we can never emphasize enough, and it was reinforced to me again over the past week, the importance of promoting our heritage and our culture. Because as a country, we are a small island state on the northwest of Europe, on the periphery of Europe. We have a population of 4.75 million. There's 1.5 million in Northern Ireland. We're a very small country. We export 80% of what we produce in this state. So we are a very globalized economy, and we need to build markets. We need to build all the time our reputation. And our theatre, our literature, our music, song, dance, all our culture and all that's attached to it, is very important ingredient in selling the Irish message. So the people are doing that work in ensuring that there's a vibrancy to the sense of being Irish and to the Irish communities. They're doing a great job on behalf of all of this island. And could I say to you, Adrian, many thanks for having the opportunity to meet up with you again and with Anya as well.
Yeah.
And also to thank all the people on behalf of my colleagues, Niall Collins, Sean Coe, and Billy Lawless, to thank all the different groups we met, the individuals we met. We listened to them, and I just want to assure them again and through to the people who wouldn't have had the opportunity to meet us, that the whole difficult area of the undocumented, the whole need for immigration reform, that's always very high on our agenda, and we keep trying to get the message across to the US administration that we need substantial immigration reform. We have people in the United States working hard, contributing big time to society, and unfortunately their status has not been regularized. We want to see that position improve for so many people, and as you quite rightly point out, Adrian, we're not going to try to raise false hopes in the present climate either.
Fantastic, and that's all the more reason why your visit and you and your deputies was indeed more than welcome, and we're going to have to do some more of it. Okay, Brendan, I know.
Absolutely.
You have, okay, thank you. I know you have.
Thank you so much.
All right, let's dedicate a song for our guest there, Brendan Smith, TD, who indeed is the chairman of the Joint Committee for Foreign Affairs, Trade and Defence, and a little something from the home county. One of the most widely known and respected songs from Cavan. Come back, Paddy Riley, and here's Brendan O'Dowd, or O'Dowd.
The Garden of Eden has